session number 18342, Reel 1.
Fred Beer, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born at Bishop Stainton, near Tynmouth.
Which year was this?
1925.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Bishop Stainton?
No, we moved just to a village called Luton, and then Idford. That's just about 5 miles from Tynmouth.
How old were you when you left the school?
Well, I left the school, at 14, 1936.
That would be 1939, wouldn't it?
1939. Beg your pardon, 1939, yes. Sorry.
Just as the war started.
That's right.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I got a job straight away at Candy Tiles at Heathfield.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I certainly did.
Under
yes.
What circumstances?
I was working at the time, still working, and we were at home at the time, I think, and we heard him mention the fact that we were now at war with Germany.
How did you feel about it?
Well, we had mixed feelings because we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I was 14 at the time.
But did you feel excited or dismayed or what?
Well, I suppose we felt that there was probably more problems knowing the history of the Germans in the First World War. And I had a brother who was older than me, and he would be obviously going into the army straight away.
Were you in any early bombing of England by the German Air Force?
No, we didn't get any bombing here, except we got some at Exeter. We had experience of, we could hear it from the distance. I worked not far from Exeter, and we could hear the bombings in the mornings and the evenings, but it didn't affect us at all, except for once at Newton Abbot. They bombed the railway station at Newton Abbot.
What happened on that occasion?
Well, there was one or two people killed, and it was just a hit and run sort of affair. And it was over in seconds before you could realise what had happened. It was over.
Do you remember exactly where the bombs fell?
They fell at the back of the station in Newton Abbot, and they demolished some houses, killed one or two people in that particular area at the time. It was pretty much of a mess, obviously.
Which street were the houses on?
They were in the back of Newton Abbot. I'm just trying to remember the name of the road. Ford Road.
Did you know any of the people who were injured?
No, I didn't know anybody at the time, no.
Which year do you think that was?
That would be 1942, I would say, round about that area at that time.
Did the early part of the war affect you very much?
Not as such, but they formed the Home Guard, and I wasn't old enough to join the Home Guard, so I joined the ATC and assisted in the Home Guard, like answering telephones and various things. We had the Home Guard in the area, but it didn't affect me in any way.
The ATC was a training corps?
Yes, Air Training Corps. Air Training Corps, yes. That was the only thing that was had for younger people to join at that particular time. The cadets were formed later, I do understand.
Was this the Newton Abbott Air Training Corps?
No, we were based at Chudley because it was near for us. It's Chudley, 2.5 miles away.
What kind of training or experiences did you have in the Air Training Corps?
It was all educational. Try and get people educated for users, air gunners, pilots, or whatever they were capable of at that particular time.
You mean all classroom work?
Yes, all classroom work. All classroom work, except for a small amount of drill.
Can you remember any of the specific things that you were taught?
I suppose mostly discipline and various things like that. I never remember very much about it. It was only a short time I was, and then because I got a job for the Ministry of Supply after a while on the timber side. The Ministry of Supply was supplying all the timber for whatever it was required during the war, sleepers for the railways and collieries and various things. And I went down to Cornwall to work. I was sort of transferred down to there to work on drawing timber and bringing it back to the factory for making into sleepers or whatever was required.
Whereabouts in Cornwall was this?
This was at Llanhydrock, just outside of Bodmin. It's a large estate there at South Bodmin, and we used to travel down as far as the airport down at Cornwall. They had a lot of timber around there, had to be cleared for the runways, and we brought it back to Bodmin for process.
Was this heavy manual work?
No, we had tractors and transports bring it back. It wasn't heavy as far as we were concerned, but it was heavy for the tree fellers. People were sawing timber by hand, felling trees by hand, and lopping the trees by hand with axes.
So you were driving a tractor, were you?
I was driving a tractor at the time, yes, a Caterpillar.
Which year would this have been, do you think? How old would you have been?
This was 1942, 43.
Any experiences that you had doing that work?
Nothing in particular, no. It was a very quiet area at that particular time. There was nothing going on that you could add to the war, except that they had in the woods they had stores of ammunition under like Nissen huts without their supports. Everything was stored all around the country, I understand, ammunition and anything that was needed for the war, so that it wasn't in one particular place that the enemy could not bomb it and destroy it all in one go. They'd never find it, in actual fact, because we only came across it because we were working in the area.
Did you feel nervous about all this ammunition around?
No, not a bit, no, not a bit.
Why not?
Well, we were young and, you know, it didn't affect us in any way.
You were about 18 or 19?
I was 18, just coming up 18 in 1943. I remember going to Bodmin to register. You had to register then for national service. And I remember going to Bodmin, and they had the Home Guard in there as well. And I used to go to their Home Guard headquarters with the gentleman I was living with and his wife. He was on the railway, but he was on the Home Guard in the evenings or afternoons or whenever he was free. It was quite an interesting time, as far as I was concerned then, because you could see things developing. Everybody was working very hard for the war effort, and it was a wonderful time, really, as far as I was concerned, because it was educating for me, because I lived a very quiet, isolated life, and then just to go from Devon down to Cornwall, it was like going into a foreign country, as far as I was concerned.
What was so foreign about it?
Well, you see, we'd never been anywhere. We didn't go anywhere in those days. We were just local, and the furthest place we went would be Newton Abbott or Exeter. And Exeter would be a wonderful experience as far as we were concerned.
Did you actually join the Home Guard in Bodmin?
No, I did, because we were working 7 days a week.
So how did you actually come to join the army yourself?
Well, as I say, I registered, everybody had to register for national service, and I registered at Bodmin, and finally I got transferred back to this area, and then I just after my 18th birthday, I had my calling up papers to join the services.
How did you feel about being called up?
Rather nervous at the time. I was wondering how I was going to get. I had to go to Chichester to join the army, and I was wondering, never being on a train any further than, say, Goodrington, which is near Paignton, to go up to London and transfer and go down to Sussex was going to be rather daunting for me, actually. We had a very isolated life, very sheltered life, if you like, and we didn't travel at all, actually.
How did the journey go in the event?
Wonderful. It was wonderful. No problems at all. I met up with lots of people on the train that were going to the same places, and we all sort of sorted ourselves out together.
And when you got to Chichester?
We were met at the station by a sergeant and taken to the barracks at Chichester.
What was the sergeant like?
We're very friendly at that particular time until we got inside the gates. And then they sorted the sheep from the goats from there on in. And we did six weeks training at Chichester. That was basic training. That was learned how to handle a rifle, marching, discipline, and PT, everything that was required of us. They checked to see for fitness, I suppose, to see who was really fit. And from there on in, we got transferred to various other regiments after 6 weeks. And I went to Colchester from Chichester.
How were you treated in the basic training?
Very good, really. It was a strict discipline, but we were treated well. At home we were used to discipline, so it didn't worry us. I think some people found it very hard to come to terms with having to do things that, you didn't like doing or whatever.
Because we sometimes hear in the media nowadays about the bullying of recruits.
We never came across any bullying.
Did you find the basic training useful or not?
Very useful, yes, very useful. Yes.
How did you take to the discipline?
Very well, really, because, as I say, we'd been used to the country and used to discipline, and we had plenty of exercise, and that was the thing, marching, PT, everything to keep you, get you fit and ready for the services. And we'd been used to running out in the country, used to run for miles, just playing sort of thing.
Were you a fit man already?
I like to think I was, yes, I like to think I was. But I think there was quite a lot of work to do on all of us, actually, to get us up to standard. Because went to Colchester, it was light infantry training, opposed to heavy infantry training at Chichester. And light infantry training is quite a lot faster than marching than heavy infantry training. And I found it very, very, at first, very hard going, all the marching.
Were there any other differences in light infantry training from the heavy infantry training?
There was a difference in the fact that heavy infantry carried their rifles at the slope when they were marching to attention. Light infantry carried their rifles at the trail when marching. And when everybody marched at ease, every regiment was the same. You marched with your rifle slung over your shoulder.
What do you mean by at the trail?
At the trail, parallel with the ground, holding the rifle parallel to the ground, and marching, swinging one arm, whereas the heavy infantry carried their rifles at the slope arms and march, at the tension. Light infantry carry their rifles at trail. that's parallel to the ground. You held the rifle in the center of gravity and marched at the trail.
So what do you mean exactly by at the slope?
When you were marching at attention through towns or villages or whatever, the heavy infantry carried their rifles at the slope, which was the rifle across your shoulder like that, and this hand under the butt, and march to attention. They called that march to attention. And when you were marching out in the country, because we used to march 30 miles some days, and you just marched with the rifle slung over your shoulder for comfort more than anything, because you had a small pack as well in your webbing.
Which did you prefer, marching at the trail or marching at the slope?
Oh, I found it easier marching at the trail. If there's such a thing as marching easier.
But when you marched at the trail, you didn't swing the rifle?
No, your hand was straight down, and you gripped the rifle in the centre of gravity, and you marched along. It was far easier than marching at the slope, I found.
Yes. Any other differences between the light infantry training and the heavy infantry training?
I think more or less they were all basically the same sort of training. Light infantry were faster in the march, you see, they had a faster pace, and that's really the only difference as far as I can see with the heavy and the light infantry regiments.
How do you feel about going into light infantry?
Well, we had no choice, actually. We were drafted in, and we were in, and that was that, you see. We didn't know where we were going until we got to Colchester, and then we soon found out that that was light infantry pace.
Any incidents that happened to you at Colchester?
No, we used to do our basic training, and every Saturday we had to do a run, and a number of miles. And at lunch, just before lunch, you went on the run, and when you finished, you were finished for that particular day, and probably for the weekend. But we just got on with it, and all the NCOs were sort of semi-retired. They came back in, they were called back in the services because they had finished their time, and they were ideal for training new recruits because they'd got the experience and they were past combat duties. They were a little bit too old for combat duties, and they were ideal for training troops.
And so were you now in a regiment?
No, we were just in the light infantry, just the light infantry. And we did another 6 weeks or so training at Colchester on everything from rifle, shooting a rifle, to attacking, and all this sort of thing. We were doing what they call battle inoculations, which was live ammunition fired, and you had to keep your head down, and river crossing, bridge crossing, and everything pertaining to light infantry or any infantry attack. And then we went from there, we got posted to a regiment, which was the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. That was up at Northumberland.
What was everyday life like for you at Colchester?
It was quite busy. Every day, every minute was taken up with work, doing something, exercise, whatever. And you were glad when the day finished. You'd go to the naffy for a cup of tea or whatever, or a pint, and then to bed, and you'd be soundo in no time, gone to sleep in no time.
So you didn't go into Colchester?
Well, we used to go in weekends sometimes, but it was just, of course, it was a garrison town, and there was plenty of troops around the area, and it was interesting, but there was not a lot to do, actually.
Was your time at Colchester an ordeal or enjoyable?
I found it at first hard going, the training. But after we got into the training, we found it quite interesting. I remember that fit, we used to get up sometimes the early hours of the morning and go for a run, just for the devilment, just to go for a run, that we were that fit. right, that was the idea, to get us tip-top condition for a regiment. And we had there were older men with us there, you know, a few older men, and they were just as fit as we were. When I say older, they were about 2 or 3 years older, and we used to think they were quite a lot older at that particular time.
So you said you went to Northumberland. Whereabouts did you go to?
We went to Bamber Castle, and as part of the battalion was stationed at Bamber Castle, and part was stationed at Sea Houses, and we went to Bamber Castle. And the CO was a Cornishman. He was Sir John Carew Pole, and he was a Cornishman. So he was a regimental. He was a lieutenant colonel in the regiment. And he welcomed us up there in the rain. And when we got there, it was pouring with rain, and welcomed us all there. There was about 15 of us, I think.
Which month would this have been?
This would have been October time.
Which battalion was it?
It was the 5th Battalion.
What kind of a man was this, Sir John Carew Pole?
He was a gentleman, and he was a full-time soldier.
Was he friendly to the new people?
He was... Yes, as an officer would be. An officer would, you know, he would speak to you and welcome you, and that was it. He was quite friendly in his own way, but he was not sort of pally, if you see what I mean.
What was the first thing that happened to you at Bamber Castle?
Well, we were put in Nissen huts that particular time, and my first experience of losing things was my mother gave me a razor in a little case. It was quite a nice thing, actually, and it came apart by unscrewing, and it fitted neatly in a case, and she gave it to me before I left, and I went into this Nissen hut for a wash and shave in the morning, and we're dashing around as usual, and I forgot to pick up my razor. And when I went back to pick up my razor, it had gone. And that was my first experience of thinking you've got to watch whatever you're doing, or you can't trust other people. Not everybody. You can't trust everybody anyway.
What else happened to you?
Well, we carried on our training there, and then we were posted down to Hazelmere, I think it was Hazelmere, and we went into barracks there with another regiment. I think it was the Worcesters, and that was a really smart regiment. It was they were next down from the Guards, they said, so we had to be on our best behaviour, and we did lots of training there, and we moved on then to, I think it was Folkestone. Went down to Folkestone from there. And we were in hotels on the front. The Lees Cliff Hotel, I remember it very well. And went on the front, and there was barbed wire entanglements beyond that. You couldn't travel, you couldn't get down on the beach naturally. And we did lots of training down there. We did all around the area. We went on manoeuvres. Day maneuvers, sometimes for 2 or 3 days out, and you never knew when you were coming back, all weathers, and the idea was to get you used to combat training, and you'd have training. We would go on night training, lifting mines, finding mines in the dark, all that sort of thing to get you used to doing things that you'd naturally be doing, I suppose. Doing real combat.
Any incidents that happened to you there at Folkestone?
No, we did very well there. We did our ordinary duties, and there was nothing that I remember that went wrong. I did get measles while I was there, and I finished up in I can't remember where it was now, but I finished up in an isolation hospital, which was a quiet house, actually. It was about 30 miles away, and I can't remember the name offhand. And I had 3 weeks in isolation hospital. I remember I went sick in the evening. We were on duty that particular night. On a Friday night, we were cleaning down. Everything had to be scrubbed down for CO's inspection on a Saturday morning. And we were up about three floors. And we slept on straw-filled palliasses, they were called. And we used to put our dress suits, our best suits, underneath on a piece of cardboard, then a piece of cardboard on top, the palliasses on top of that. But the floors were bare, and there was no furniture or anything. Everything was stored in your kit bag or put on your bed for inspection. And every now and again, they had CO's inspection, and we had to scrub the place from top to bottom. And we were doing this on the Friday evening, ready for Saturday morning. And I asked permission to go across to the Naffy to get a bun and a cup of tea, and the orderly sergeant on the desk said, "You look ill. What's the problem?" And I said, "I felt fine because of the fact I was going on leave on the Monday, and if I could get home on the Monday, I knew I was going to be okay. I should be better by, say, a couple of weeks anyway. I might have got a bit extra leave." But he said, "You go on a special sick report," and I went on the special sick report down to the MI room. And the MO put me on an ambulance up to, I can't remember the name of that place now. And I was in there for 3 weeks. And then I went back to the regiment again at Colchester.
Was it a measles epidemic amongst
us? No, it was just an isolated one, apparently. There were three or four other men in this ward, sort of like a private house, actually. And I don't know where they came from. I never did find out where they came from, but it wasn't an epidemic. It was just an isolated case as far as they were concerned with me.
Were you very ill?
Well, I didn't feel all that poorly, really. I just thought, well, this is going to be a bit of a rest. And we went in the ambulance. I didn't know where I was going. They put me in the back of the ambulance, one of the canvas-covered ones, and I just lay back there in the dark, and I thought, well, wherever we go, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be finishing up somewhere. And after about 30 miles or so, of course, journeys were very slow in those days, in the dark anyway, and I found myself in this hospital, and it was all civilian nurses, and it was quite good, actually. We were looked after very well. And I soon recovered, and there was no smoking whatsoever, and everybody smoked in those days, and you weren't allowed to smoke at all in the wards, which is a good thing, I suppose.
Were you a smoker?
Everybody smoked, I think, yes. There were very, very few non-smokers in those days, because we were encouraged to smoke. Everybody seemed to be encouraged to smoke, I suppose, because of the war. It helped the nerves, they hoped, and tea and cigarettes was a great thing, wasn't it, in those days?
Who was encouraging you to smoke?
Well, you know, everybody smoked, and you just carried on. You